Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic. Each weekday, we bring you a meditation inspired by the ancient Stoics, something to help you live up to those four Stoic virtues of courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom. And then here on the weekend, we take a deeper dive into those same topics. We interview Stoic philosophers. We explore at length how these Stoic ideas can be applied to our actual lives and the challenging issues of our time. Here on the weekend, when you have a little bit more space, when things have slowed down, be sure to take some time to think, to go for a walk, to sit with your journal, and most importantly, to prepare for what the week ahead may bring. I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Hey, it's Ryan. Welcome to another weekend episode of the Daily Stoic Podcast. I've gone over this before. My guy is Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius is the one who changed my life. But if I had a second favorite Stoic, it's Seneca. And I think Seneca is the better writer. Or in fact, he's actually a writer, right? Marcus Aurelius is writing Meditations to himself. Seneca is not just writing philosophy, but he's a playwright. He's one of Rome's most famous playwrights. In fact, he was such a well-known playwright, and I have read his plays, that there's a line of graffiti from one of those plays at Pompeii. And in fact, modern historians didn't believe that Seneca the dramatist and Seneca the philosopher were the same person. It just defied their comprehension. So in today's episode, we want to talk not about who Seneca is exactly, but how you read Seneca, how to actually think about his works, where to start, how to apply them, best translations, all of that. I really break down Seneca and his writings because it's a question I get a lot. I want to read Seneca. Where do I start? What should I be looking for? What should I take out of that? And that's what we dive into in this episode, how to read Seneca, who I think, as I said, is the most interesting Stoic. Certainly not the best, certainly not the most pure, but all of that makes Seneca even more exciting. And I'm happy to share this episode with you, how to read Seneca. And I do hope you read Seneca. And if you ever swing by the Painted Porch here in Bastrop, Texas, we've got almost all these translations, and I think you'll get a lot out of them. Seneca is actually born, most scholars think, the same year as Jesus Christ. And they're actually both born in provinces of the Roman Empire, and they both become immensely influential philosophers in their own time. Seneca's father is a wealthy man, a bit of a writer himself. He has his young children tutored in philosophy. Did he want them to be philosophers? No, he was probably planning for Seneca to become a lawyer. And that's the track that Seneca's on as an early young man until what we think is a tuberculosis diagnosis sends him all the way to Egypt. He's forced to travel to Egypt where they think the climate will be better for his health. Right as his legal career is about to take off, he's forced to take almost a 10-year break way out, far away from Rome. Early on, Seneca is learning, as he talks about a lot in letters and his essays, that fortune is not fair, that fortune is full of reversals, that fortune surprises us, that it lands these blows upon us. All we can do is choose how we respond. Seneca makes his way back to Rome and his political career picks up where he left off. and he climbs his way back to the top of Roman political life. But again, just as Seneca's political career is beginning to take off, he runs afoul of the emperor, Caligula, and then Claudius. And he's exiled. He's sent away from Rome, the place that he had just come back to. He's sent away again. We're told that Seneca was superior to all of the senators in Rome. He's the wisest, most brilliant, most admired guy. And this is probably why he is sent away. And he goes to Corsica, an island in the Mediterranean, where he would spend the next 7 or 8 years. So twice now in Seneca's life, he's been sent away for no fault of his own. And this is where we think Seneca begins writing. Seneca does not take this exile well. It's hard on him, although he does console his mother at the loss of her son. We can tell he's feeling really sorry for himself. He's struggling. He's not talking about these ideas in the abstract, but really struggling with them as a human being. Imagine, you're just as your career is taking off, you're forced to go move to a rock in the middle of the ocean. None of your friends, none of the things you hold dear, that would be so hard. And that's what Stoicism is. It's not just a philosophy in theory, it's a philosophy for hard adversity just like that. Seneca is given a reprieve when he is brought back to Rome to tutor a young boy who is in line to be emperor. And the boy's about 16 years old. He takes to Seneca to the boy, and he begins to tutor this boy just as he had been tutored in philosophy. And then this boy does become emperor. This all sounds like a very happy story, but it gets really complicated because that boy is Nero. Seneca, the Stoic philosopher, is a tutor and then works in the court and holds positions of leadership during the administration of one of the worst Roman emperors. It becomes this really provocative question. Was Seneca complicit in Nero's crime, or was Seneca the adult in the room? The first couple years of Nero's reign go really well. Seneca is credited for that. But then as Nero spins into insanity, Seneca is also implicated in that. So it's this tension, right? Did Seneca live up to his teachings? Was Seneca selfless? Or was Seneca part of the problem? Seneca was rich. He was wealthy. Is this a contradiction? Some people thought so. Even in Seneca's time, they did. But Seneca says, we should cease to forbid philosophers from the possession of money. No one has condemned wisdom to poverty. The philosopher can own ample wealth, he said, but it should have been wrested from no man, nor should it be stained with another man's blood. Wealth acquired without harm to any man without base dealing is no less honorable, and it should make no man groan except the spiteful. And this is true. This, the problem is, you know, Seneca did get bloodstained money. He got it from Nero. But his point was that a philosopher could be rich. What mattered is, were you indifferent to the wealth? If you had the wealth, you should enjoy it. And in fact, Marcus Aurelius says this about his stepfather Antoninus. He says, what makes Antoninus great is that while he had abundance, he enjoyed it, but when it was gone or when it wasn't there, he didn't miss it. But in the end, Nero turns on Seneca, or Seneca turns on Nero, and Seneca is driven from public life one more time. And this is, I think, where he spends the rest of his life doing his most important work. He says, the duty of a man is to be useful to his fellow man, if possible, to be the useful to many, failing this, to be useful to a few, failing this, to be useful to his neighbors, and failing this, to himself. But when he helps others, he advances the general interest of mankind. I think Seneca's most important work is not his political work, it's his writing. His writing is what survives to us today, what I hope you will start reading. He knew what it was like to be successful, and he knew that the real purpose was doing this philosophical work. He spent the last 3 years of his life completing his books and letters, and towards the end he reflects, he says, my days have this one goal, as do my nights. He says, this is my daily task and my study, to do away with old evils. Before I came old, I took care to live well. In an old age, I take care to die well. And that is ultimately one of the most prevalent themes in all of Seneca's writings, is death. Seneca says, the time that passes belongs to death. He says, like, for me, I shouldn't think of death as something that might come 40 years from now, if I'm 34 right now, that maybe I'm lucky to live to be 80, so I got, you know, 45 or so years. I should think of death as something that's already happened to me. I've already died 33 years. And so how we spend our time is what makes death either a tragedy or simply the final chapter on a wonderful life. And in the end, Seneca is forced to make good on all of his teachings. Nero suspects that Seneca has conspired against him, puts to death some of Seneca's closest family members and friends, and ultimately comes for Seneca too. Seneca has been out of power for several years when Nero's goons come for him and demand his suicide. And Seneca now has to meet death bravely because he's written about it so much. And so he goes bravely to his death. First, he slits his wrists, but he's too old and lean for this to work. Then he takes poison. That doesn't work. And finally, he's smothered to death in the bath. He meets this death as something that he had been, in effect, preparing for his entire life, because it's true. And it becomes his greatest moment. It's captured in many beautiful paintings. It becomes sort of an inspiration of resistance to tyrants everywhere, kind of the idea that we can be dignified even in our last moments. And he said, look, yes, Nero is taking my life, but in the end, evil drinks the largest of its own poison. And he knew that ultimately it was better to be him than to be Nero.
I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorne.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts, discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. One thing the Stoics all have in common is that they love to learn. They love to learn from people who had experiences, had insights, had interesting lives. And that's one of the things I love about podcasts. It's like an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours sometimes right into the brain of a person who thinks very differently or has experienced things very different from what you've experienced. And that's something I always feel when I listen to my friend Jordan Harbinger's podcast, The Jordan Harbinger Show, which is the sponsor of today's episode. His show has interviewed basically everywhere. You can listen to his episode with Robert Greene on the laws of human nature, or both my episodes, where I talk about solving for what you want in life. You talk about my book, Conspiracy, or Stillness is Key. I mean, he's had literally everyone you can imagine on. Professional art forgers to billionaire entrepreneurs to mafia hitmen to models to professional athletes. He did this episode about birth control and how it alters the partners we pick and how medicine can affect elements of our personalities. He talks about just everything you can imagine. It's just a great show. I recommend it. The podcast covers a lot, but I think the one thing it's constant is that he always pulls useful bits of advice from his guests. And I can say that from experience. I always feel like the interviews I do on the Jordan Harbinger Show get something out of me that I didn't talk about the interview I did just a few days earlier. I, like the when I
I would point you to those interviews if I was say, hey, someone's like, hey, what's a podcast you were on? I'd connect you. I might link you to one of my episodes with Jordan because it would be different from all the other ones. And I think that's all you can really ask for from a podcast. I enjoy it. I recommend it. There's so much there. You can check out jordanharbinger.com/start for episode recommendations, or just look for the Jordan Harbinger Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you to Jordan for sponsoring this podcast, and I hope you give it a listen. I think Seneca is one of the most accessible and readable of all the Stoics, in part because he's not writing these like complicated philosophy texts. In fact, his best writing comes to us in the form of letters. Hundreds of letters from Seneca to his friend Lucilius survive. The second letter, I think, captures a great way to think about Seneca. He says, "You should be extending your stay among writers whose genius is unquestionable, deriving constant nourishment from them if you wish to gain anything from your reading that will find a place in your mind. To be everywhere is nowhere. People who spend their whole lives traveling abroad end up having plenty of places where they can find hospitality, but no real friendships." Basically, what Seneca is saying is that you have to linger on the works of these master thinkers, that you read them not just once, but many, many times. I find that I can dip in and out of Seneca, but every time I read him, I take away something else. And I think that's because Seneca's writings are informed, again, not just by his thinking, but also his deep experiences with loss, with pain, with grief, with power, with greed, with money, right? Seneca is one of the richest people in Rome. So as he talks about money or finances, as he talks about wealth, you know, he's speaking about this really from experience. One of the things that really struck me reading Seneca in my early 20s is he talks about choosing yourself a Cato, right? Picking an example, somebody whose life you're going to model yourself against. He says, choose yourself a Cato. Choose someone whose way of life, as well as words, and whose very face mirrors the character that lies behind it. Pick someone who has won your approval. Be always pointing to him as your guardian or as your model. He said, there is a need, in my view, for someone as a standard against which our characters can measure themselves. Without a ruler to do this against, you cannot make crooked straight. So I love this idea of picking a model, picking someone who you are checking yourself against. You'd say, what would Cato do in this situation? What would Seneca do in this situation? What would my grandfather, my grandmother do in this situation? What would Jesus do? Doesn't matter what it is, but he's really talking about philosophy as a way of picking your heroes, choosing your heroes, and then modeling yourself against them. One of the reasons I have this Seneca statue in my office is a reminder of to see what Seneca would do in a situation. Sometimes I want to do it, sometimes I want to do the opposite of that. One of the things I think is most fascinating about Seneca is the wide breadth of philosophy and ideas that he draws from. Yes, Seneca is a Stoic philosopher, but you'd be surprised, the philosopher he quotes most in this book is actually Epicurus, right? If you've heard of Epicureanism, it's a rival school to the Stoics. But Seneca says, I'll quote a bad author if the line is good. He says, I read the other philosophers like a spy in the enemy's camp. He's trying to learn from everyone and everything to be a better, wiser, kinder, smarter human being. And to me, that captures the essence of the philosophical lens that Seneca is coming from. Seneca really talks beautifully about how we are spendthrifts with time, that we don't value our most precious resource. And we should, and it's tragic that we don't. He says, look, if your neighbor came over and parked their car on your property, if your neighbor built a shed on your property, you'd say, what is this? Get off, you can't do this. But if your neighbor wasted an hour of your time, you would let them, which is insane because you can get more property. You cannot get more time. And so, you know, he talks about how we had this insatiable appetite for accomplishments at the cost of time. I have this quote actually up in my office. It comes from this essay. He says, the one thing fools all have in common is that they're always beginning to live, right? They're always putting things off. And he says, you know, some of us, we lack the courage to change. He says, we lack the courage to live as we should and instead simply live as we have begun. We just stay. We're afraid of challenging the status quo. I would say one of the most powerful essays that Seneca writes is his essay on anger. And it's sort of written to his brother, that's who it's dedicated to. But in fact, It's written to Nero. He's trying to advise Nero and all Romans about the importance of being in control of oneself, because this is what leaders have to do. He says anger is a kind of madness, and he says that delay is the greatest remedy for anger. He says to get angry is like returning a bite to a dog or a kick to a mule. The point of Stoicism is to be unperturbed, to not be riled up, to not be at the mercy of your great passions. One of Seneca's most famous exercises, he talks about pre meditatio malorum. He says, practice, anticipate all the things that could happen. He says, exile, war, torture, shipwreck, all the lots, all the terms of the human condition should be before our eyes. And as I said, it's good that he thought this way, because he does suffer shipwrecks. He is exiled. He is tortured. Ultimately, he's executed, right? Seneca does not live an easy life despite his privilege and success. Seneca is prepared for this. He says, the unexpected blow lands heaviest. What we anticipate, we take the bite out of it. So Seneca is always thinking about what could happen, not to become anxious, but to prepare for it. And I know sometimes people think, well, if I'm thinking about the worst case scenario always, isn't that going to make me depressed or scared or anxious? Seneca says, no, because this actually is not what we're talking about. It's about preparation. And he says, look, to suffer in advance is the wrong way to do it too. He talks about how often the things we imagine that we're worried about are honestly worse than whatever happens. He says, we suffer more in imagination than reality. So part of this for Seneca is also being present. It's this balance. It's like, how do you think about the worst case scenario? Prepare for it, have a plan, and then you can be fully present, because if it does happen, you know what you're gonna do. If it doesn't happen, you keep doing what you're doing. And this is a really important balance. In letter 107, Seneca talks about adversity. And again, we know he's talking from experience, because life has kicked this guy's ass. He says, life is no soft affair. It's a long road you've started on. You can't but expect to have slips and knocks and falls. And so we have to be prepared for these things. We have to be tough. And Seneca says, it's good to experience this. He says, there's no one I pity more in this world than a person who has not experienced adversity, because they don't know what they're capable of. They're not ready. As you're reading Seneca, you're seeing all the tough things that happens. You shouldn't be like, oh, I hope that doesn't happen to me. You should think, well, how have I been tested? What adversity have I dealt with? What do I know that I'm capable of, right? And that's what we're trying to cultivate. The Stoics practice training, right? The Stoics prepare for adversity, so when stuff happens, we're ready. In one of Seneca's plays, I think he talks about this. He says, this is a beautiful line. He says, if the breaking day sees someone proud, the ending day sees them brought low. No one should put too much trust in triumph. No one should give up hope of trials improving. Clotho, this is the god of chance, mixes with the other and stops fortune from resting, spinning every fate around. No one has had so much divine favor that they could guarantee themselves tomorrow. God keeps our lives hurtling on, spinning in a whirlwind. And I think Seneca's life embodies this, right? Moments of triumph, moments of trial and adversity, moments of great good fortune, moments of profound misfortune. But he endures all of it. He soldiers through all of it. He does his best, which is all we can do. We absorb the blows of fate. We keep going. We don't get discouraged. I guess one last theme to think about for Seneca is the theme of friendship, right? His letters to Lucilius are filled with all sorts of affection and kindness to his friend. You shouldn't think that the Stoics were without joy. And I think of all the Stoics, Seneca seemed like he lived the happiest, most interesting life, the most filled with friends. You know, Seneca reportedly, and this is what people were critical of it, he had 300 tables. He would throw these Gatsby-esque parties for all his friends. And there is a criticism to that, but it's also, you know, to me, evidence that he wasn't just some dour philosopher. Seneca had friends. He said, nothing delights the mind so much as loving and loyal friendship, right? And my favorite part of Seneca, he says, how do I know I'm making progress as I study philosophy? How do I know I'm getting better? He says, I know I'm becoming a better friend to myself. One of the things I've found as a business owner is you kind of get stuck with your old services. You get stuck with the things you, I don't know, you inherited from the first company you worked at. You use these tools because everyone else uses them, and you just kind of expect things to be mediocre, to be expensive, to not meet your needs. That's where today's sponsor comes in. Novo is powerfully simple business checking. They're not like a traditional bank. There's no minimum balances, no transaction limits, no hidden fees. It's not that boring one-size-fits-all approach. It's customized to your business. It integrates with all of the things you have, like Stripe and Shopify and QuickBooks as a business owner. Sign up for your free business checking right now at novo.co/stoic. Plus, Daily Stoic listeners get access to $5,000 in perks and discounts. Go to novo.co/stoic to sign up for free. novo.co/stoic. Novo is a fintech company, not a bank, and banking services are provided by Middlesex Federal Savings, FA, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. As I've said before, the way to read, especially a book that can change your life, is with a pen, with paper. You could use highlight flags, but you want to read it and really digest what you have. As you read him, I want you to read not just once, but many times. Read over and over and over again. My favorite translation of Seneca's letters is this one, Seneca's Letters from a Stoic by Penguin Classics. The Penguin translation is really a best of Seneca on some core Stoic topics. Grief, wealth, poverty, success, education, temper, right? The things that human beings struggle with, particularly ambitious, busy people in the world. You can also get the Loeb Classical Library, has all the letters. This is only a selection of the letters. You can get all of them here. These are also available for free online, but I prefer physical. This one's cool if you can read Latin, which I can't. There's also a Latin translation, but this is all the letters. This is like 50 or 60 of the letters. I think ultimately there's like 200 letters. You can get all of them with Loeb. Seneca's moral essays, he's written a ton of different essays. One is called On Providence, one is called On Anger, one is called On the Happy Life, there's one called On the Tranquility of the Mind, On the Shortness of Life, which is actually my favorite of Seneca's essays. Penguin has a little translation called On the Shortness of Life, which has not just that title, it has Consolation to Helvia, which I was telling you about earlier, which is Seneca's letter to his mother, and On Tranquility of the Mind. This one's awesome. I actually sell my bookstore, The Painted Porch, if you want to check that one out. This is another good one by Moses Sadas. It's a bunch of different of Seneca's essays. James Rahm, who wrote my favorite biography of Seneca, this is called Dying Every Day. Seneca has this beautiful quote about how we are dying every day. That death isn't this thing in the future, but it's something that we're moving towards. It's something that's happening right now. So this is a really beautiful biography. It's haunting and moving. I've had him on the podcast a couple times, but if you haven't read this book, you absolutely should. This is another little translation of Seneca that I like. This is called How to Keep Your Cool by James Rahm. I actually blurbed it. I wrote, few have written more eloquently and profoundly on the perils of anger than Seneca. And this is just a collection of some of Seneca's best stuff on anger. James Rahm has this translation of Seneca, which I love, called How to Die. And it's an illustration of just how often Seneca speaks of this, that a selection, not even the entirety of his works on this theme, could surpass 230 pages. But I love this little translation from the Princeton University Press and definitely suggest it. And of course, I have a chapter on Seneca in my book, Lives of the Stoics. Here's the chapter on him, which you can check out. There's a fascinating statue of Seneca in Nero by the artist Eduardo Barone. And I think it captures the tragic relationship between the wise, patient Seneca and the petulant, egotistical, undisciplined Nero. You know, Nero is sort of thrown, he's got a hood over his head, he's the quintessential, indifferent, uninterested student. And Seneca's there, he's got this book spread out before him, he's trying to teach, and Nero's having none of it. And I think it captures where Seneca was. It's that expression, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But I think it applies to all of us. Seneca has provided all this wisdom. Was he the perfect teacher? Was he a little bit of a hypocrite? Are there some cautionary elements to him? Yes. There's so much writing. Are we going to take the time to read it, though? Are we going to avail ourselves of it? Are we going to apply the wisdom? Are we going to turn the wisdom into works? That's on us. Seneca put it all out there. He lived it by experience, right? And then the question is, are we going to take advantage of it? Are we going to be a Nero or are we going to be a hero? Are we going to apply the ideas or are we going to ignore them? And I think that's, to me, what that statue represents. I think it's a powerful image. I think about it always. And look, there's a reason I have these busts of Seneca in my office. This is one we actually sell in the Daily Stoic store, but it's interesting, you know, Seneca's image is of himself this way. And this is what we thought Seneca looked like. But they've come to discover that this is not Seneca. This is a sculpture they now refer to as pseudo-Seneca, right? Seneca sees himself and presents himself in his writing as this haggard, thin, you know, lean figure. But in fact, he looked more like this. There's the only actual bust of Seneca that survives is this bust, and it's actually on the back. His Cicero is coming out. But actually, you know, this was more Seneca. And to me, the difference of the image and the reality is also an important philosophical concept. And it ties into one of my favorite quotes from Marcus Aurelius, where he says, "Don't waste your time talking about what a good man is like. You should be one." Seneca didn't get there. He wasn't perfect. None of us are. But we can nevertheless learn from him, be inspired by him, and hopefully be made better because of him. Thanks so much for listening to the Daily Stoic podcast. If you don't know this, you can get these delivered to you via email every day. Check it out at dailystoic.com/email. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Guy Raz's How I Built This is a podcast where each week he talks to the founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you hear these entrepreneurs really go into their story. And Guy is an incredible interviewer. He doesn't just dance around the surface. He has real questions because he himself is an entrepreneur. He's built this huge show and this huge company. In a recent episode, they talked to the founder of Liquid Death, that crazy water company that's become this billion-dollar brand. Follow the show on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. And for a deep dive in daily business content, listen to Wondery Destination for Business podcasts with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. Us.